Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Mike Dillard, welcome to the show.
Good to see you, brother. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, having you back after just a couple of months. We talked about Bitcoin. We'll cover that later on in the show. But what we want to talk about today is how you survived the great Texas snowstorm of 2020. Was it 2020 or 2021?
2021.
Yeah, January.
Apocalypse.
Right?
Yeah, the snowpocalypse.
So yeah, a lot of people were caught off guard, and I wanted to have this conversation around stuff like that because, you know, let's just say everything else was going hunky dory in the world. You could still get caught off guard by that sort of stuff. So we'll talk about, like, what are some of the essentials that you knew you needed to have just in case the electricity went down.
I mean, we can go pretty deep down this rabbit hole. This is something I've been doing for about 10 years now. And yeah. I actually was inspired to, quote unquote, start prepping from some very wealthy, I would say, colleagues of both of ours or mentors of both of ours, which was Kyle Bass and Porter Stansberry and a couple of those guys. Yeah. And, you know, they all have these huge off-grid farms and gold and guns and all of this stuff, right? And they're both billionaires. And I asked him one day, I was like, hey, what's the point of that? What is the purpose of that? And this was after the big crash of 2008, and people were kind of concerned about what was happening in the world. And their answer was interesting. They said two things. One, the single biggest opportunities that are going to ever be available are when chaos is taking place, right? When there's quote unquote blood in the streets, you know, financially, when the markets are crashing, when there's events taking place around the world and there's chaos, that's when opportunities can be found. But in order to take advantage of them, you have to be out of your limbic system, meaning out of your limbic brain and your reptilian fight or flight brain. And you have to, be in a parasympathetic, calm, rational state so that you can see and act and look for opportunities and take advantage of those instead of, you know, running to the grocery store and looking for toilet paper and food and you know, medicine like everybody else is, right? And I thought that was really genius, and I thought that was really smart. And so I started to do the same thing. And the second reason is, especially if you have a reasonable amount of savings or money, and you don't have the basic necessities that you would need to keep your family alive in a circumstance where this grand complex system that we live in today that we call society were to skip a gear and come to a stop. And for me, that's kind of how I look at it. It's like, I've got a ton of money. If I didn't spend just 1% of that to get the necessities my family might need if this big machine comes to a halt, I'm an idiot. And I don't ever want to feel like that. And so, and then the consequences are significant. And, you know, when we look at the world today and what we've seen specifically over the last 2 years is that we live in an incredibly complex machine called the supply chain that we depend on. And most people don't realize, because we've taken it for granted our entire lives, is that we live on a life support system. Every single day, you and I and everybody watching this literally is connected to life support, and that is electricity. It's no different than blood or oxygen as far as we are concerned. If the electricity goes out in our society for an extended period of time, I'd say a week or more, society comes to an end. Society dies, right? And the more complex a system is, which our world has never been more complex than it is today, the more fragile it becomes and the harder it is to restart and rebuild and to get back up and running again. And we are now seeing that in the supply chain issues that we're having in the United States and around the world. And I believe that in the next 12 to 24 months, we haven't even seen anything yet. It's going to get significantly, significantly worse. And so we've spent the last year you know, we were already well prepared, but now we're taking it very, very seriously. And we're organizing with friends here and family members in our local community. And the main thing that we are preparing for is that the electrical grid would go down for an extended period of time, because in my opinion, that is a worst case scenario. You know, if a nuke goes off and there's nuclear war, you know, everybody's toast at that point, right? But if the electric grid goes down for whatever reasons, in Texas, we were during the snowpocalypse within a couple of minutes of the grid going down. And people think, well, what's the big deal? Well, for us, that for South, we're not prepared for stuff like that, like people up, you know, in the North are, meaning our pipes freeze, our water pipes freeze, the power lines go down. We don't have salt to put on the roads. We don't have public repair, you know, vehicles or equipment that are made to move during the cold. And so our entire infrastructure would go down. And what is interesting to think about is that if that had taken place, it would have, from the reports that I read and you know, the other information that I got, would have taken, you know, 1 to 2 months for them to get the power back up and running. And if you imagine a power down scenario, and we're in the middle of Texas in Austin, and we were on, and we're on our own power grid in Texas, right? So even if our grid went down, then there's power to the north of us in Oklahoma, New Mexico, to the right in Louisiana, et cetera. You couldn't get to any of those states, because one tank of gas in from the central part of Texas is not enough to get you out of Texas. And so the gas stations are not going to work. They don't have electricity. The gas pumps are not going to work. If you don't have backup fuel that you can take with you, you're on a ride with no destination to an even worse scenario.
Also, and no so traffic lights working. So
yeah, and there's going to be dead cars on the street if that had taken place. Other people who are trying to leave the town, the state would have, the roads would have been blocked. It would have been a full-on zombie apocalypse, you know, type scenario, like, you know, the Walking Dead type deal, with cars littered all over the highway. And people don't think about that. They don't think about the fact that if you live in a high rise in a downtown, well, not just a high rise, but if the grid goes down, your toilet stops flushing because the pump stations for the water stop working, right? So you have one toilet flush left in each of your toilets, and then that's it. Now you're going outside. What if you live in an apartment complex or a high rise like I used to in downtown Austin?
Right.
People are going to have to start throwing their waste over the balcony, right? The elevators are not going to work. I lived in on the 26th floor. So every time I would want to leave the house, I would have had to walk down 54 flights of stairs and then up 54 flights of stairs every time I wanted to move or leave. And so that was a big wake up call for us. And the good news is it really spurred a lot of people into action and to start getting supplies and the things that they need. But I think that was just a preview of what could possibly happen here in the next 24 months. So
we go back in time to 2008 when you first got started in it, because a lot of people are probably just, you know, like you said, not thinking about it, casually thinking about it, you know, won't think it won't happen to them. And, you know, they don't know, we don't know, I don't know the first thing about it. And so it would seem like the number one thing that somebody might, you know, should get for their home is a gas power generator. Is that right?
Not really. Not really. So here's the most interesting part. The saying is that any civilization is 9 meals away from anarchy and chaos, right? That's 3 days. Once you've gone, you and your family have gone 3 days, you've got kids without food, without a meal for 3 days, you're neurology changes, your neurochemistry changes, your values change, and now you are going to into survival mode, and you're going to be willing to do things that you never thought you'd be willing to do in order to keep your kids and your family alive. And what is interesting as I've studied this subject, you know, more and more, is there's a case study of a gentleman who's written a few books out on Amazon about it today, but he was in the, I think, the Balkans or something along the lines, but like the Eastern European area in the 90s, where they went through a civil war and they were in a town of 60,000 people that were, you know, basically surrounded by opposing forces overnight. The power was cut and they had to live a year and a half without electricity. And what he said that the single most important thing was, is that you had a community of family members and friends that you trusted that were either on your street or the houses next to you. And you basically formed your own gang, for lack of better words, because what would happen is within a week or two, other gangs would form of people who have no problem committing violence, criminals, whoever it may be, who are well-armed, and they're just going to start looting and ransacking houses. And if you happen to be in that house with your family, you're dead in that scenario. And so the people who went out on their own and basically bugged out or thought that they would get out of the situation and would go off into the hills and go camping or whatever, those people all died. And it was strength in numbers. So you wanted to have a group of at least 20 to 30 people that you lived with in the same house or the same two houses. And then you would have, you know, patrols that you would set up to basically keep the home secure as long as you had guns and firearms. But community was the biggest thing. He said, if you had a generator, you were dead, because it was like a lantern to a hornet's nest, you know, or, you know, flies or whatever, because it's noisy and you're the only house that has lights on and power. And you're now the biggest target. You've got a bullseye on your back. And so a gas generator is definitely not the way to go, but a solar generator is definitely something that I would recommend. And so we have a couple of those. There's Goal Zero. There's a brand that we use called Jackery. There's a brand called Titan. And these are little, you know, handheld battery systems that probably weigh 20, 30 pounds that you can come with solar panels. You can set them outside, you know, out of view, charge up and get enough power to keep your emergency radios going, your flashlights, your phone. Not that that's going to do you much good in that scenario, but, you know, a little refrigerator. We do a lot of overlanding and camping. So we have a Dometic refrigerator, which is traditionally used for people who go camp off grid. Mm-hmm. And that works with a 12 volt power outlet or a regular AC outlet. But that's a refrigerator that you can keep food in or freeze, you know, frozen meat in, and definitely that can be powered by that solar generator on a daily basis. There's other people with medical devices. I have friends who've reached out who are type 1 diabetics and they're dependent upon insulin, and they've been stocking insulin, but insulin has to be kept cold. What happens if the power goes out again for an extended period of time during the summer? Well, the insulin goes bad within a week or two and they die. Right. So they have now a Dometic refrigerator and a solar generator that will keep that insulin good, you know, indefinitely in that kind of scenario. You know, I've gone to the extent, I've done a lot of military training in my life over the last 10 years. So I have night vision and a lot of really amazing defense technology, but it all requires batteries and all requires electricity. And so for us, the solar generator is by far and away one of the most valuable things that we have.
And those brands again?
Jackery. So Jackery is the one that we use. And it really is, what can you find in stock? Titan makes another one. There's a few brands out there. You can do some YouTube reviews, but Jackery is the one that we use and it's gotten great reviews. The 2000 model, the top model, it's not cheap. It's about $4,000. That has a 30 volt outlet on it. So that would power a full size, your home size refrigerator, but that's about all it will power, you know, up to that and everything else below it. But, you know, that brings us to the next piece of the puzzle, which is food. You certainly want to have a couple of things, which are water. So first and foremost, water is going to stop coming out of your faucet. Do you have access to water? If you don't, you're screwed. And so use something called water bricks, which you can order off of Amazon. And they're these big blue plastic chemical-free bricks, basically, that you fill with water and they stack nice and neat. And we have an extra shower here in my office that we have like 20 or 30 of those stacked up for, you know, at least 100 plus gallons of water in there. And why do you need that? Obviously, you need to drink water if it's not coming out of the faucet anymore. Maybe you live in a desert like, you know, Nevada, Las Vegas, whatever. Those people are screwed. Luckily, we live, you know, within a mile or two of a lake here, so we could always refill. But you need water to drink. You also need water to rehydrate any dehydrated foods that you might have. And all of the emergency foods out there, whether it's Mountain House or any of these other brands that you buy, they're all dehydrated and they all require water in order to eat. So I would say ammo and firearms is priority number one. Water is priority number two. Food is priority number three. Backup energy is priority number four. And then above and beyond all of that beforehand, the most important thing is to make a plan with your friends. For example, I have family in San Antonio. They're an hour and a half away. I have a brother in town as well. And you might have a community where we had everybody over at our house, you know, about a month ago, and we had 30 really close friends who were prepping as well. And we just said, hey, if the power went out tomorrow, where are we going? What are we bringing? Do you know how to get there? Do you have enough gas to get there? Because if we don't do that now and the power goes out, your cell phones don't work, right? That's it. Google Maps might work for a little while. You know, GPS will work for a little bit. But you can't plan after the fact. And so, you know, for my parents, they wouldn't know what to do. Are they going to stay in San Antonio and, or are they supposed to come to Austin? Are we going to come get them? Are they going to come to our house? What does my brother do? You know, for our friends, we might have all of these supplies and preparedness things, but we all live in different neighborhoods around the city. And if we don't know where we're going to meet up, then we don't have that community. You know, now we're stuck with our immediate neighbors who, frankly, we don't know very well, and they're probably not prepared at all. And we don't have enough supplies or food to support 20 other people outside of the immediate four or five of us here at the house. Another, you know, big thing that came out of that is we have some friends who bought 200 acres of land for kind of this purpose where we could all meet up at. The challenge is that it's 120 miles away. So here's what's really interesting. If, you know, you've got a big F-250 truck like I do, and it's, you know, it's about as big of a truck bed as you can get to haul things from supplies from one place to another, it gets about 10 miles a gallon. So roughly that's, you know, 12 gallons of fuel, one way, 12 gallons of fuel back. So let's just say it's 25 gallons of fuel for round trip. I would expect for us to get a year's supply of food and all of the other supplies that we would want with us. It would take at least five trips round trip. That's 250 gallons of fuel minimum. And a truck, you know, that has a 35 gallon fuel tank. So if you don't have that fuel in your garage, because the fuel stations aren't working anymore, you're not getting your supplies to where you want to go. And they're not going to do you any good, right? So doing the math and starting to think around issues like that is really, really critical. Here's another part that comes up. On that 120 mile drive, it's basically down farm roads through the Texas Hill Country, which, you know, sounds great. It's not on any major highways.
Whatever. It sounds great, except if you've watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, this is even a little scarier for me is that, the best thing about Texas right now is that everybody has a gun. The worst thing about Texas, if the power goes out, is that everybody has a gun.
Yeah.
So if you're driving a nice truck full of supplies down a country road at 100, you know, for 120 miles, after people have started to get wind of what's really happening here, guess what? There's probably 50 dudes in deer camo with their deer rifle waiting for people like me to drive down the highway with one shot through the windshield. And now they've got a car full of stuff. Yeah. And I've got to make that trip, you know, five round trips, 10 times. It's probably not going to happen. And these are the types of things that people don't think about. But, you know, unfortunately, and I'm not, you know, it's interesting. All I'm basing my prioritization of this right now on is what people in power are publicly talking about, specifically Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum, right? We've probably all heard of the Great Reset book that he released a year and a half ago, right after COVID came out. And he's come out on television a couple of times, and he keeps warning the world about a cyber pandemic that's going to take down the grid and reset the entire financial system and reset society. And that's a part of the Great Reset of his concept. They've been running an exercise once a year for the last 2 years that you can go look at online. It's called Cyber Polygon. And so the World Economic Forum gets together like the top 50 to 100 Fortune 500 companies, and they run these emergency exercises that says, what would happen if the grid goes down? How do you prepare your team and your infrastructure for this? So they are actively preparing for this to happen. The last time they ran exercises like this was a year and 2 years before COVID happened around a pandemic. So I'm like, if the richest, most powerful people in the world are formally running training exercises around the grid going down, I should probably do the same thing. And that's really what we're basing our activities around. So
when you get your community together, or when you address members of your family, you know, how it's maybe a little easier now.
Yeah,
3 years ago, very difficult. But you know, so not everyone's from Texas, or you know, not everyone is thinking about this. So how does one bring? How did you bring it up with people years ago?
I started with the opportunity side, like I did in the beginning of this talk, where it could be about opportunity. And with our circle, we're all entrepreneurs, right? So we are wired to look for opportunities like that. And if you start to drop people's names like Porter or Kyle Bass that have a lot of credibility and a lot of success in life, like clearly these are smart people who've done the same thing. Maybe it's a smart thing for us to do as well. Now, at least in Texas and states like Florida and the South, everybody's, you know, for the most part doing this, other than I would say the very liberal woke crowd that you would find in California, who are still in complete denial about what this is all about and what's actually happening in the world. Those people I don't think are prepping at all. And ironically, the system that they worship is what's going to be what takes them out. So if your friends or family member are in that crowd, I would simply start by asking questions. Hey, do you remember when the grid went down in Texas last year for 3 days and a bunch of people froze to death? We had to go, luckily we have a 4x4 truck. So we had to go literally rescue people who were going to freeze to death within, you know, one more night. They didn't have any electricity, they didn't have any heat, and they weren't at their house. So they didn't have any extra clothing or jackets or anything. They just weren't prepared at all. And they were literally huddled in a cabin with no food, no water, no heat, no power, no clothing, and they were going to freeze. And so we had to go grab them. But I would just start, you know, asking them questions like that. Hey, I'm running a little thought exercise here. What do you think would happen in the world if we lost power for 2 weeks, like just with our lives, and a UFI couldn't talk and our phones didn't work and we couldn't reach mom and dad and the grocery stores were closed and we couldn't fill our car with gas and, you know, the water stopped running out of the tap. What would we do? And maybe just get them thinking, you know, about that probably for the very first time in their lives. And hopefully the conversation will continue. And if it doesn't, then you need to go find a different group.
And finding groups like that, you know, a little bit easier these days. You've put together events. I've seen you speak about freedom at events. How do folks find those things?
As far as setting a group up?
Just in terms of like getting like-minded people, or even just going like, where else can they investigate information on this? Like, who are the people that, like, the newsletters to be on, that that sort of stuff, the online groups to be part of?
There's a ton of information on YouTube now. Like the prepping channels on YouTube have you know, exploded. But as far as, you know, a local group goes, what the most important thing is that it's with people that you would trust your life with. And so for our group in Austin, we have the Signal chat in Signal, you know, so it's a private encrypted app and we chat on that, you know, daily. We had our first in-person meeting to kind of talk about all of this a month ago and to kind of get the ball rolling into really, even though our group is prepared, there's lots of things that I brought up today, like the fuel piece that hadn't been calculated yet. Let's talk about that a little bit further. So our friends have this ranch house, right? It has 4 bedrooms in it and they've got 200 acres of private property, which is fantastic. That doesn't hold 20 to 30 people, which means the majority of people are going to need to sleep outside, right? So Are you prepared for that? Do you have a tent and sleeping bags in that kind of year to spend up to a year outside or longer? And I say up to a year or longer because, again, if something major were to happen to the electric grid and this whole thing goes down, it's going to be very, very difficult to start the machine back up again. It's, you know, the longer it's down, the harder it gets to turn back on. And so we all thought this COVID thing 2 years ago was going to be 2 weeks to slow the curve, right? And I put out a video that said, what if this goes on a lot longer than we think it does? And here we are two years later into this, right? So some of the things to think about that we talked about at that meeting, let's say there's 30 people that comes up. What is the number of actual people that would be coming with you, meaning extended families? So for us, you know, I have a son, my fiance has a daughter. That means we have two co-parents. So it's not the four of us, it's the co-parents, my brother, my two parents, that's seven. And then the other two of them, that's nine. We went from four to nine instantly of just immediate family. Are either of them, those co-parents, in a relationship, like a long-term committed relationship where they're living with someone, right? And now they have to come, and do they have kids? Well, that nine can now be 14 or 15 people of like immediate family you're obligated to take care of. Now, let's say that happens with the other 20 or 30 people. Well, now we have 100 people show up at the property in a four-bedroom house. Maybe, you know, most of them, or not most of them, maybe half of them are prepared and they've got some food, you know, and a year supply. We've got a year supply of food for one person. Well, with nine people, that's now less than a month, right? That's just, well, around a month, right? Just over a month of food. That's not enough. It's certainly not enough. And so making sure that they have met the basic requirements of what they would need to bring and what the expectations we would have for them to even show up at the property. Hey, you need to come with at least 6 months worth of food. Now, we all talk about water, right? If the water stops running, well, the property has a couple ponds on it and maybe a well, and you're going to need to filter that water. A lot of us have these gravity-fed Berkey systems in our kitchen to, you know, clean our water. And so we'll bring our Berkey, but guess what? You could run water through that thing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's not going to purify water fast enough to provide water for 20 people, let alone 80 to 100 people. So every family needs to bring a Berkey. Let's say we need to cook food, right? You put all your most important essentials in the car, the back of the truck, and you drive to the property, and whatever you brought with you is what you brought with you. Well, now we're supposed to cook food for 20 to 80 people with one set of pans and maybe eight forks and eight knives and eight spoons that they have in their kitchen. You know, so it's these kinds of details that most people are not thinking about. And the biggest challenge around this is if you're a prep, quote unquote prepper, you've been thinking about the stuff that you need to take care of the people that are in your immediate household and influence. You've got enough food for them, water for them, utensils for them, sleeping bags for them, whatever it may be. What you're not thinking about is the people that you care about that are in your family who will never prepare because they don't have the financial means to, or they just don't have the mindset to, and they're just going to stick their head in the sand. And yet your choice is, well, you either help them or you let them die. And the helping them is the option you're going to take. But now you're not prepping for four people. Now you're prepping again for 14 in our personal case. And so as a leader, if you will, again, with some financial means, that's a whole different ballgame now, right? And so we have an entire storage unit full of food because I know that we're going to need food for more than four people. We're going to need food for a lot of people. And we're adding to that constantly. And the opportunity to do that is getting shorter and shorter with the supply issues that are happening right now around the world. There's going to be a huge food supply shortage in 2022. That's going to be the theme of 2022. The farms are shutting down. They're running out of parts. They're running out of tires. They're running out of fertilizer. And the supply chain crunch is about to hit the food industry. And next year, there's going to be a massive global food shortage, which means if you want to stock up on bulk or emergency food, your opportunity to do that's probably between now and the next 3 months.
Let's dial it back a bit and say that it's, you know, another 5 days or 10 days. Let's help people get through that first. So most people probably aren't even prepared for that. Are they?
Yep. No. That's the whole 3 days. You know, your food in your fridge is going to be bad within 72 hours of not having cold air. Yeah. So you have what's ever in your cabinet. And if you're like most of us who, at least if you live downtown, you go out to eat every day, or you go to Whole Foods every day. You don't have a pantry full of food, especially if you're in your 20s, you know, you can kind of live from meal to meal.
And so then, you know, just in terms of what someone can or should get right now to get them through a couple of weeks so that they can, you know, just, hey, this is the closet. Here's the stuff. Yep. Keep that closet full. Never look at it again.
Yeah. I would go get some Mountain House freeze-dried meals. And I say Mountain House because those are the meals that, you know, people who are hiking and mountain climbing actually eat, because it's like real food. There's so many of these freeze-dried preparedness foods that I used to buy in the past that are, you know, it'll keep you alive, but that's about it. It's a miserable thing to have to eat. And so for me, it's worth paying the extra money to have a meal that's going to keep, you know, the people and the kids, you know, happy and something you can enjoy rather than slop. So go in and get 30 days worth of food, right? Get some batteries for your stuff. Get, if you can, a little solar generator. The Jackeries start, you know, probably at $1,500. You can probably find some for even less money than that. Buy some water bricks and, you know, put 20 or 30 gallons of water underneath your bed, stack them in your closet, put them in an extra shower, whatever you have, your garage. Buy a Berkey water filter. And then buy a portable, you know, hiking water filter that's kind of a hand pump. Water's critical to this, having access to clean water. So if you need to move, I keep one in the back of my truck under my seat. It's just something you buy at REI. You could buy the Life Straws. But you've got to have access to clean water. So those are the critical pieces of the puzzle. Definitely some flashlights and some batteries. You know, it's nice to have some walkie-talkies that you could give to other people in your neighborhood or your building, because those will still work and allow you to have some communications with folks. And then after that, it's, you know, a firearm, and the ability to use it is definitely a huge priority. Having the ability to defend yourself is critical. If you're not, all of your supplies, you're just basically buying for somebody else. Yeah.
Got it. All right. Well, let's switch it up again, Mike. And so you talked about there's optimism, right? So, yeah, you know, there's going to be chaos. The optimism that comes out of the chaos, what is it that you're planning for?
Yeah, well, that's a great question that I usually start these kind of talks off with, which is when we have these conversations, a lot of people can get scared and they tend to freeze and they tend to panic and they don't know what to do and they just stop. They start to, you know, take a negative outlook on the world, and that affects their work or their business, and it can just lead to kind of a downward spiral. So for me, I try to look at all of this through a different lens or different context, which is, how cool is it that I get to experience prosperity and abundance, you know, even when the systems that we rely on are no longer available? How cool is it that I get to take care of friends and family members and, you know, maybe even save their lives if there's an emergency where they aren't able to take care of themselves. And so for me, I see it as an opportunity to be a leader from a community perspective and a family perspective. And that is a positive experience for me. It's not a scary experience. It's like, wow, this feels really good. I get to take care of other humans. And so when you look at it from that perspective, that's one way to keep a positive outlook. The second positive outlook is, again, hey, when the world's going crazy, we get to relax and just chill and watch movies, you know, we download some movies onto the iPad or the computer and just kind of take a few days off, you know, for however long it lasts, and just chill rather than crap. Where am I going to get food? How am I going to get water? I don't have any gas in my car. That's another little tip, is we never let our cars get below 50%. On the fuel tank. When we hit 50%, we go fill it up. And then we have extra fuel in the garage. But, you know, for me, that's it. And this entire last 2 years and what it continues to turn into is that it's waking people up. It's waking people up to the fragility of the society that we've built. It's waking people up to the evil that is showing itself around the world today, to the tyranny that's showing itself around the world today. And it's pulling people out of their days. And that's an incredibly positive thing that needs to happen, in my opinion. And so the question is, do you want to be a victim of circumstances that you can't control, or do you want to give yourself control of your circumstances no matter what happens? Right. And I think that's ultimately what this is about, is do I want to have control over my life no matter what happens out in the outer world, or do I not? And do I want to panic and be a victim? Panicking to be a victim sounds horrible. Being in control sounds a heck of a lot nicer. So
what happens to Bitcoin if the power goes out?
It's interesting. That's an interesting question that I've thought about too. It's interesting because it will depend on how wide the outage is. Is it just the United States? If so, you know, mining, the miners outside of the United States, the difficulty will adjust down, and the miners outside the United States who still have power will pick up the slack. If it's global, then Bitcoin's, you know, it's interesting. I'm sure there are some mining operations that have backup power, like the geothermal one in El Salvador right now. And I know there's some others in Europe that all run on geothermal power. But if a global significant power outage were to go out, the last thing that you're going to care about is Bitcoin or gold or the cash in your bank account. Because if the power goes out, guess what? You know, your bank account, you know, goes out as well. And gold doesn't do you any good. And this is, you know, this is in an extended, you know, power out scenario. If it's a week, you know, things boot back up, great, no big deal. But if it's longer than a week or two, then, you know, all of those things become irrelevant. And the most valuable items that you have are clean water, bullets, you know, to trade, food to trade, any kind of things like that. Those become the most valuable things in the world at that point. So, you know, I've got 90%+ of my net worth in crypto. So if the grid and Bitcoin were to crash, you know, indefinitely and go that direction, yeah, so be it. Maybe I should diversify and put some actually into gold, you know, that way when things come back on, if the digital world is down, well, gold will still be, you know, one of the places that you can go, but it's one of the last items that I would have on my list after the necessities, because you can't really eat gold and nobody's going to want to barter for your gold if you're in that kind of scenario. So that's kind of how I've thought about it.
Let's suppose that, you know, none of these things do come to pass, and, you know, keeping on the crypto stuff, and we'll finish off on an optimistic side of things. NFTs, yeah. You know, I've been told that I just have to start my own. I have, you know, get my own NFT, be like Gary Vee. What is your whole perspective of NFTs or for the future? Let's say the future is relatively an optimistic place.
Yeah, absolutely. NFTs will be, and I'll just say this, the future is going to be a very optimistic place for people who are okay being a part of the new system that is being unrolled right now, meaning you're vaccinated, you have a vax ID, you're plugged into the new matrix. Life's going to be good for those people. For people like myself who prefer sovereignty and freedom and am not going to give over control of my body to somebody else, it's going to be very challenging for us. So that's just something to think about there. But as far as the NFT question goes, it's going to be the most dominant trend in the world for the next 10 years, but you have to think of it far above and beyond the little graphics and images that are being traded right now. Yeah. NFTs are going to drive. So you have to think of it. We're seeing the groundwork being built for multiple virtual worlds. And these are worlds that have real world value. So you can go into Decentraland and buy actual digital land for hundreds of thousands of dollars right now. And there's multiple versions of worlds like that being created. And so the NFTs are what allow those digital assets to be bought, sold, and traded on open marketplaces for the very first time. You can then tokenize any physical asset that exists in the world right now, whether it's your watch collection or your Ferrari or your piece of art or your house or your business. You can tokenize that and then have a token, again, be traded out there in the world. And so think of the amount of value that is going to be unlocked over the next 10 years, Craig, because it's not comprehensible. Meaning, how much assets are there in the world today that have value that are not publicly traded? The vast majority of them. Meaning, unless you have a company that's publicly traded on the stock market, it's hard to unlock the value of your asset outside of getting a loan against your home. But again, any kind of art, any kind of collectible, any kind of business, any kind of experience, whatever it may be, the value of those is going to be unlocked and they're going to be put into an open market, and the real price and value of those is going to be found, and it's going to be incredibly liquid. But beyond the value, the trillions and trillions that's locked up around the world today in the physical world, now that we're creating digital worlds, what's the value of a digital world? It's infinite.
Especially if there's
it's infinite. Yeah, it's infinite. Right? If digital objects now have value and they can be created, the amount of creativity that the human race has is infinite, which means the value we can create is infinite. And for the very first time, that creativity and that value will be tradable, which has never been possible before outside of closed ecosystems like the companies that have produced the games and have controlled the ecosystems. And so it's going to be unbelievable, assuming we can get it through this, you know, these next 5 to 6 years. So NFTs are going to take over the world. Everything is going to be tokenized. But right now, it's the Beanie Baby phase, right? It's wild speculation for a few days or a few weeks or a few months' time. They're starting to realize that you can create NFTs with utility, right? If you own a Gorillaz, you know, NFT, will you get access to a private Discord group, right? With everybody else who owns a Gorilla as well. And these are some of the most successful crypto traders in the world. So now you get access to insider information. So buying a Gorillaz NFT for $150,000 has a significant amount of utility to it. They also, you know, spin off, if you hold it, basically passive income in the form of literally digital banana NFTs that you can go sell on the market for, you know, 10 cents, 50 cents each that are worth real money. And so now this little image that you're holding in your crypto wallet is literally earning you passive income on a daily basis. And so because they're programmable, they're starting to add more and more value to these NFTs that are, God, who knows what it's going to look like in a few years. But right now, it really truly is the Wild West. So I own some Doge Pound NFTs that I bought because of Alex Becker's recommendation. I did very well on that, Alex, so thank you. But that was the first NFT I've bought. And right now I'm waiting and I'm watching because we're coming into the later half of this crypto cycle. And what I'm going to do is see what are the big cryptos. Is it going to remain cyberpunks? Is it going to remain, you know, the other big projects out there?
What are the biggest ones
going to be at the top? Yeah, the Bored Ape. Yeah, Bored Ape, Yacht Club, and all of that. So are those going to remain the top? What are they going to peak out at the top of this next bull market? And then at the bottom of the bear market in a couple of years, then I'm going to start scooping those up. And who knows what the NFT market will look like 3 years from now, whenever it's the bottom, 2 years from now. But that's how I'm going to play it instead of buying in right now at this moment in time, because it's just way too speculative. I'd rather get a sure thing and continue to invest in top 20 altcoins, you know, make my extra 5 to 10x here between now and the end of the bull market, cash out, ride it down in cash, and then start buying those at a 90-95% discount, you know, a couple of years from now. So
got it. And will you be talking about some of this stuff in Richer Every Day?
Yeah. So in Richer Every Day, we have my basically beginner's course for crypto. We have kind of my suggested portfolio out of the assets that I've bought. And then we have a a class there on knowing when to sell, basically the technical indicators that I follow as far as how to time the market tops and the market peaks so that you can exit and not do what I did in 2017, which is to ride it all the way down to the bottom and still sitting on those assets here today, which, you know, are great because it's recovered, but it was a long 4 years. Yeah. And I'm certainly not going to do that again. So
cool. So that's richereveryday.com is your course and all the information in there. Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome. Mike, this has been eye-opening and optimistic for sure. So everybody make sure to focus on the optimistic side and at very least do what Mike taught you to do to get through 10 days at least 5 days in a tough spot, tough jam.
Create your own optimism. That's what this is about, is don't wait for optimism to come from your access to Whole Foods. Create it for yourself so that you always have it no matter what.
Yeah. I enjoyed your Instagram post the other day of you driving home from Whole Foods with, it was the Mad Max image.
Right.
Yeah. We're in for an interesting time, as the fortune cookie does say.
Yeah. If you want to take a deep dive down what's happening in the world and why from a scientific perspective, read a book called The Fourth Turning. It was written 25 years ago by two historians, and they've basically predicted every single thing that's happening and why, down to the financial crash of 08 and the pandemic that we're currently going through. Wow. And so if you want to find out why this is happening and what's to come, that book basically has predicted all of it. So
appreciate it, Mike. I think I read that in 2008, probably time to go and reread it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I appreciate you, man. Dude, this has been really helpful. Everybody listening, go check out richereveryday.com. Follow Mike on Instagram at Real Mike Dillard, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Mike. Thank you so much, my friend.
At Real Mike Dillard. And then when you bet, one quick warning, I will never DM you. There's a lot of spam bots. When you follow me, they will follow you back and they're going to try and sell you crypto. That's not me. So just to give everybody a heads up.
Thanks again, Mike. Appreciate you.